People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to the Gravity Podcast, where we host conversations on developing a Christian spirituality rooted in love that fosters resilient faith in everyday life. I don't know what to tell you, man. I told you you could shave your back and there wouldn't be any problems, but if you started shaving strangers' backs, you would get into trouble. You're on your own. We got a podcast to do. Welcome to the Gravity Commons Podcast. My name is Matt Tebbe. Again, joined by my friends, Ben and Christy. Hello, everybody.
You know what I love about this right now is that, listeners, you can't tell, but like, you know, Matt's got this great grin on his face. He's like so happy and proud of himself that he just talked about shaving backs. And Ben, you're just like straight face. Like, oh, yeah, there's my friend. Yeah. Just, yeah. You know, yeah. Doing his thing.
I haven't figured out. Matt just started doing this on the podcast, slandering me publicly. And I haven't figured out how to relate to it, delights Matt.
I appreciate it. It's just not about me. I don't know what he would say, but I feel like it's like, he can't do that with me. So
no, I can't. It's all about how you're punching.
Right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I feel like if I did it with you, Chrissy, it'd be picking on you or punching a little down. And I don't feel that at all with Ben. My conscience could not be cleaner. I just decided that, you know, we end with a little joke, and I thought maybe I would work in something
start with a little
joke at the beginning. So slander also too, Ben, just to maybe pivot back to your accusation of me. Mm-hmm. I think slander has to have a hint of veracity, right? Like the slander has to like be plausible to be slander. Otherwise, it's like parody.
Because people have to believe it could be true.
Right.
This is true. Right.
And so me suggesting that you're shaving strangers' backs and getting in trouble for it, I'm just going to guess for the vast majority of our listeners, they know that that is not happening.
Yeah. 0.1% of the listeners were like, wait, is he? That's weird.
I knew I didn't like Ben.
I agree. I agree, which is why I have allowed all of these episodes to air where you've done this. Yeah. Right. I mean,
I'll take that as your tacit
live radio.
I heard consent.
No, I heard tacit endorsement and yeah, consent.
Yeah. People forget how podcasts work. It's like, yeah, if you don't like something that you that got said, you just don't have to release it. Like you can re-record it. It's not live radio. Anyway, so
there was one time I think we started recording and something happened and you hit pause and you're like, we can't say that. And I forget what it was. Do you remember what it was?
I don't remember either, but I was like, I just felt it in my, I was like, this is, we cannot.
I remember
that. Do this.
And I remember thinking,
I don't remember what it
all
was.
All of
though.
Our listeners are like, what was you it? Know, yeah, what was it? Tell us. I know. Here.
I don't remember. It was a while ago though, Ben.
It was a while ago. I don't feel like it was something like very like it wasn't like super inappropriate or anything like that. I don't remember what it was. I just remember thinking, oh shoot, that's probably not a good thing for us to keep in there. I don't remember what it was though.
I don't know if it was naming names or
yeah, maybe that was it. Maybe we got a little too particular and I was like, we're going to get sued. I have no idea what it was. Anyway. All that to say, Matt, I think part of the way that I'm joking about it is accusing you of slander.
That's great.
Because
I love it.
I don't think that anybody believes I'm shaving people's backs, but they'll never really know.
I just appreciate both of your faces when it's happening. And yeah, I'm sad that our listeners cannot see it.
Cannot see the faces.
I need to take a picture next time.
Yeah.
Posted
you know, we had a vestry meeting on Wednesday night this past week, and I'm fine tuning my sensitivity meter to how many jokes I can get away with without disrupting the meeting. And so there has to be like this equal or more having constructive, valuable contributions per joke I tell. Mm-hmm. And I just want to say, I think on Wednesday I really nailed it. I think I did a great job.
Based on our senior warden's
Christy,
face,
can you share a story?
Sure.
Can you share
I'm not sure.
We don't need any feedback, Ben. I don't know if, Ben, I don't even know if you were there. Christy,
wow.
The senior warden was sitting right next to me. I think she, you know, she's probably an Enneagram 2, and she really enjoys helping people, mm-hmm. and especially mm-hmm. people that look like they need help. And I think with every joke, she sees me as somebody who needs more and more help.
Yeah, that's probably why she tolerates it. She's like, oh, bless his heart. This poor man.
Are you okay?
Has
let's
no
have lunch.
Clue
let's have lunch.
How to participate
week.
In a meeting.
No, her yep. name's Donna. She's amazing. Yeah. Yeah, she's amazing. Anybody got a recommendation before we jump into our podcast today? Anything you want to recommend?
Man.
I think through it. I'm going to recommend a musical artist that I think people should check out. His musical artist name is Kishibashi, Kishibashi. He's a Japanese American, artist. He plays violin. He's a classically trained violinist, but he writes, really interesting, kind of gorgeous and very, quirky music. Mm-hmm. But it's also deeply, deeply meaningful and very thematic. So he tends to write these albums that are like birthed out of, they've got like a theme to them. So anyway, his most famous album is, I can't remember the name of it because I didn't load this up beforehand. But his most famous album is all about his reflections on the Japanese internment camps that the American... you guys remember this? World War II?
Yeah.
After the bombing of Pearl Harbor, there was a lot of Japanese Americans who were rounded up American citizens, but they happened to be, you know, of Japanese ethnicity. And they rounded them up and put them into internment camps. And I think his parents or his grandparents were part of that. And so he reflects on that. Anyway, he's coming to Indianapolis in October. I'm going to go see him. And his live shows are absolutely wonderful. And his new album, I'm super excited about this. His new album is called Kantos. I don't exactly know when it comes out, but it's spelled Kantos. Mm-hmm. And it is based on two things that merged for him. One, him reading the sci-fi series, The Hyperion Kantos, my favorite sci-fi series of all time.
Yeah.
And his reflection on the teachings of Immanuel Kant. So get it? Kantos?
Oh, now I get it.
Yeah. So that's like the whole album is like that, is like his reflections on that sci-fi series and the teachings of Immanuel Kant. He does stuff like that. He's an incredible artist, and I highly recommend.
That is awesome. I mean, I've heard him before because I've been in the car where you've played him. Mm-hmm. So this is just for listeners' sake. On a scale of 1 to 10, 1 being not at all, and 10 mm-hmm. being exactly, how like 98 degrees that boy band is Kishibashi.
Oh, yeah. So what's your ranking?
No, I'm asking you just to give our listener a flavor, you know.
I actually don't know 98 degrees, but if it's like if it's like NSYNC or one of the other boy bands, I would say on a scale of not at all to, I would say one, not at all like that.
Great. Listener, well, there you go.
Maybe two because it's, you know, it's pop music. So.
All right.
Yeah.
Christy, any recommendations?
You know, I don't really have a lot of recommendations right now. Except for like maybe drink water. That's like my big recommendation.
You
right
and
now.
My doctor. Ugh.
I tell all you right. what. I mean, I live in a desert, right? And,
yeah, that's
and
true.
The other day I was like really challenging myself to see how much water I could drink. And I was like, oh, I do feel better. I feel yeah. better when I drink mm. more Nalgene of water.
All right. That's good.
So anyway, that's my silly
that's,
one.
That's but good important. Though. I remember last time I visited Colorado, I had to keep that in mind. It's yes. so easy to get dehydrated so quick.
Yeah.
Out there.
Yeah.
High desert. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah. If I had to give a recommendation, it would be find a way to gently and lovingly antagonize the people who love you.
Okay. But you're so good at
emphasis
that.
On subtle and gentle.
Subtle and gentle.
As Christ subtle would.
There we go.
Antagonize.
As Christ loves the church.
As Christ would antagonize them.
As Christ wow. antagonizes the church.
No, my recommendation is to join us at Theology Beer Camp.
Come on.
Good one.
In Colorado, drink your yep. water.
Denver, Colorado.
Yep. You'll drink lots
when
of water.
Is it, Matt?
Some
when
beer.
Is it?
It's in October.
Yay.
Yes. I will even get more specific. October 17th through 19th. Beloved listeners.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's great.
Theology Beer Camp. Today's interview is with Trip Fuller, who organizes this this thing every year, and we talk a little bit about it in this interview. But I'm really excited to participate this year. I'm excited for some of the speakers. Brian McLaren's going to be there, Ilia Delio, Diana Butler Bass, a bunch of other folks, and a bunch of other podcasters. So people that kind of do this kind of thing that we do. They've got, I don't know how many people there are. I'm looking through the page here. How many different podcasts are coming, but tons of ways to connect with people who are thinking about the same stuff that you're thinking about.
And even if you just come to hang out with us and sample yeah. some tasty beer and nerd out on theology,
yes.
that is enough. But message us. Let us know
point.
If you're thinking about it.
Yeah.
Come. And you can
that's
drink root beer with me.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I'm not
beer
a big
is
beer
optional.
Fan.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
that,
anyway. And Tripp was telling us this, that there's, you know, more and more, there's people who are sober, there's people who just don't like alcohol, who don't like yeah. beer, you know, that kind of thing. And there's more and more options available for folks to enjoy and imbibe. And nerd out, as you said, Matt. I'm excited mm-hmm. about it. So anyway, yeah, message us if you plan to come. Oh, and if you do come, so here's how to register, listener. If you go to gravitycommons.com/theologycamp, that'll take you to it'll forward you to the page that you can register. And when you register, you can use our code, which is GravityHobbit, all one word, two B's in Hobbit, GravityHobbit. If you use our code, you get $50 off registration.
$50
off registration. What else happens? Oh, yeah. And then we actually can benefit from that as well. And so it'll make the trip a little bit more sustainable for us that they'll, if we get a certain number of registrations on our account, they'll offer us a place to stay.
Yeah.
Which will help the gravity budget.
Mm-hmm.
It'll help us get out there. So yeah. Anyway, if you're interested in joining us, again, Denver, Colorado, October 17th through 19th, I hope you can join us for Theology Beer Camp.
All right. Speaking of,
we're talking with Trip Fuller today. Trip Fuller likes the LA Lakers. He likes beer camps. He likes Ilia Delio, the church. He likes philosophy. He likes Battlestar Galactica. mm-hmm. who doesn't? He likes Lord of the Rings. He likes podcasting. He likes writing and Jesus. Probably not in that order, but he is the host of the acclaimed podcast Homebrewed Christianity and uses his PhD in philosophy, religion, and theology at Luther Seminary, where he's a visiting professor of theology. And today he joins us to talk about the podcast that he produced called Emerge, that was all about the emerging church movement and all kinds of other stuff. All things nerdy and theology is what we get into in this conversation. Trip Fuller, welcome to the Gravity Commons podcast.
Glad to be here. And, you know, got a very, very consistent feature of our cosmos tied right to your name.
Yeah.
Like it is a commons if we
take it's like it's a common experience of us all, whether we like it or not. Gravity.
Yeah.
I like it. It took me a second to figure out what you were referencing there, but I got it. I got
it. Well, I'm glad you figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
Now that we got that established.
Yeah. Whew. Now that Trip has declared no one gets to own gravity.
That's true.
There's no enclosure.
Yeah, yeah.
Trademark. Extraction.
All rights reserved. Trip, I don't know how many of our audience are familiar with you and what you do. So could you just give us a flyby, like an overview? Like, what is it that you care about? What is it that you do? What do you find yourself up to most days?
Well, so I started the Homebrewed Christianity podcast in 2008, mm-hmm. which means it was a long time ago.
Yeah, and that was when podcasts were, but the twinkling in Apple's eye, you know?
Yeah.
So
I've been doing that a long time. Over the course of that, I went to divinity school, did a PhD. I was full-time clergy for 15 years and then started teaching in the academy. I was on faculty in University of Edinburgh for science and religion for 3 years. And then 2 years ago, switched to doing this full-time and moving back near family and things after dragging my family across all the different coasts into another country. Mm. On top of like the podcast, we also have a big Substack with like 70,000 people on it. And, we do lots of classes. Mm-hmm. So like last year there were 20 some thousand people that have taken one of the homebrewed classes. Mm-hmm. And we do a big event every year, Theology Beer Camp, which y'all are going to be at.
Yep.
Which we'll have like over 30 theologians. I think there's now 40 podcasts.
That's great.
I started that of January 2016 was the first one. So,
okay.
I mean, they didn't meet in COVID, but it's been a thing. Yeah. So there, like over time there was this like, just doing the podcast and trying to get free books and talk to the people who you read their books turned into a thing. Cause I guess I was just doing it first. So just longevity and perseverance.
Yeah.
Research wise, like, I mean, obviously I was doing lots of religion science stuff and my PhD is a joint one in philosophy and religion. Okay. And I've written 2 different books on Jesus, Christology and stuff like that. Tom Ward and I did one recently called God After Deconstruction, which is very for like normal people, not painful. And there's a book series. I made a movie called The Road to Edmund, which is a buddy road trip comedy with progressive spiritual themes.
Really? That's great.
Yeah. You know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But stuff. I kind of love podcasting. Mm. That's how you keep doing it. I think I've done, I'm almost 1800 episodes across all the podcasts I've done.
Jeez, Trip.
Really?
That's a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which just think if you've never heard me before and you're like, oh man, I should check this out. Then all of a sudden you're like, nah, that's like finding out, you know, like at the end, like you just discovered The Simpsons and you're like, oh, I wonder how long this show's been going on. Yeah. And then you're like, oh, it's like a whole year's worth of cartoons. I'm not getting attached.
Yeah. Who has time for this? Who has time for that?
I'm sympathetic to this. I've got a few podcasts I listen to. And if I listen to an episode and I really dig the vibe and the interactions with people, I end up going back and like listening from the beginning. Mm-hmm. But I'm in the middle of there's a podcast called Behind the Bastards. Mm-hmm. Basically, is like a comedy history biography kind of thing. But there's like 700 episodes, and they're each like an hour and a half long. And yeah. So I feel almost like trapped.
Well, you know, I think a lot of it depends on how fast you can listen to podcasts. I use the Pocket Cast app, and you can cut out silence, have it normalize the volume, and play it at like 2.5 speed. So, you know, when I'm catching up or, you know, a new season of the Lakers is starting, and then I'm like, all right, I'm going to listen to all the off-season episodes so I know kind of what's happened.
Yep.
I don't listen to off-season episodes in the off-season.
Right. You've got to catch up. Yeah. I've done that before where you listen to it at like, you know, 2.5 times speed. And I feel like you get the gist of what's going on, you know, without the details. But, you know, part of me feels like, is this just performative listening? Like if I speed it up to where I can't understand it, have I still listened to a podcast?
Yeah. You gotta train yourself. See, mm-hmm. living in Los Angeles mm-hmm. and having this twice a day driving for 90 minutes.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
And driving in Los Angeles is a lot like a treadmill. Like, you know, it has to be done to get to where you're going. You're like, I would like to not die. So I need to walk, but there's nothing about the experience that makes you feel human. So if you can zone out into something, then it's great.
It's like a benefit, a gift. Yeah. Thank you for that, that little intro. I think I took one of the classes that you guys offered maybe just a couple of years ago on like Christianity and socialism, mm-hmm. Christian socialism. I can't remember what it was called, with Jörg Rieger.
Yeah.
So, and he's going to be at Theology Beer Camp, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
His picture on there. Well, speaking of podcasts, I wonder, one of the things I wanted to chat with you about, Trip, is that one of the podcasts that you recently, I guess I don't know, did you produce it? It was the Emerged podcast. Mm-hmm. I listened to that. It's on the Emergent Church or the Emerging Church movement, which personally, that really captured my imagination when it was all happening. Was it like 20 years ago? And as I listened to the podcast, it was kind of a trip down memory lane for me. And I was struck though by how similar a lot of the themes are, the questions that are being asked now. And I'm thinking specifically of, you know, our community, the Gravity Commons community, just people that we listen to our podcast, people that we talk to. A lot of the questions that are being asked now are very similar to what was being asked 20 years ago in the emerging church movement. I'm curious if you could just riff on like what you make of that. Is that, you know, is it this like continuum? Is like it just a continuation of what's, you know, happening today from what was happening then? Is this something new? Is it cyclical? Like, how do you see?
What were the themes that stuck out to you? Like, where you're like, oh, we still have these.
I think that the questions about epistemology, mm-hmm. right? You know, that kind of a thing where people were like, oh, there's different ways of knowing. You know, how do we know what we know? And so some of the, especially, I guess, some of the philosophical underpinnings of, you know, what was causing people to ask questions about theology, you know, in a new way in that emerging church movement. So I don't know. Do you have a perspective on that? Like, what?
Yeah,
what's happening today?
I guess the two things I would say is, one, I think you're right that if you like took all the topics that have led to recent people within kind of American evangelicalism to go through some faith transition, half of them are going to be the same, and they're like the perennial ones for the modern world, like problem of evil, religious mm-hmm. pluralism, you know, these kinds mm-hmm. of questions that if you take a philosophy of religion class, there's like units dedicated to it.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
The plausibility of God, like all those kinds of things, right. or the kinds of things that show up in a history of religions or biblical studies ones about historicity and these kind of things, or science religion type stuff. Those I think are there, and those kind of become more heated when there's some critical mass of people that all of a sudden we're told don't ask that question, mm-hmm. right? Or a reality shows up that they can't like repress, or a question is asked that they can't unhear, right? And then there's this long intellectual conversation that takes place throughout kind of Christianity's experience in the modern world with the sciences, criticism, all that kind of stuff. So like some of them, those are the same. And when it goes to like the epistemology questions, like how do we know and all that kind of stuff, I think the more recent, like since 2016, disenchantment with the dominant form of evangelicalism, some of those questions came up. Mm-hmm. The answers I think people are giving are a bit different in the sense that I would say like the kind of hardcore alt-right style evangelicalism mm-hmm. was like, let's stop complaining about postmodernity and have alternative facts and our right. new version of true. Like they embraced it in a way where.
Yeah. Who saw that coming? Right.
Mm-hmm. I didn't.
Yeah, it was amazing. Amazing.
But the other half of the reasons, and we did a number of surveys, Tom and I, Ord and I did for the God After Deconstruction book. The other half, you can see rather specific instances in since 2016, like Christian nationalism raises a different kind of thing. The uncovering of church abuse, harm, the kind of professionalizing, shaming and scapegoating the queer community. Like there are these things that got dialed up that, that occasion, not so much a perennial question, but a very contextual one or from your moment. And those, I think, give it a different tenor. The closest I can think of during the emerging church movement was, like 9/11 and the response after it, where all of a sudden there's a whole bunch of Christians are like, oh, we're going to go get those towel heads, stand up for America, put a boot in their ass, you know, and you're just like, whoa, where'd this come from? That had an element to it, but evangelicalism was different then because like all the people, let's say like the Gen X and older millennials that became home in a different part of the church or left it right during the emerging church movement aren't there. So it's not like you're sitting there looking at build a wall, block up immigrants, George Floyd, all these kinds of things are happening, but it's not like they all have Tony Campolo come preach at their Christian college anymore. They don't have Shane Claiborne speaking at their youth events. So there's this whole chunk of evangelicalism that during the emerging church movement, they drew the line like, oh, you know, farewell, Rob Bell. We got limits here. Right. Yeah, God may not be an American, but he wants to be.
He likes us. Yeah.
It's kind of like a, you know, you're sitting there making your bolognese and it's going to sit on the stove all day. Uh-huh. And when it goes time to serve, it's got this thick sauce and all those veggies and stuff all up in there. But when it started, it was just really watery. And as it all boiled off, the things that boiled out of American evangelicalism before the recent round meant you didn't like have an immediately obvious leader of the community that articulated a diversity of opinions, like all the way down, like Southern Baptists were kicking out people that were a part of the takeover. You know, when my family got excommunicated, the people who were running it, half of those people aren't fundamentalist enough. And then they're, you know, like, oh, we got to get rid of, Rick Warren and his church.
Yeah.
Look at them. They ordained a woman. Mm-hmm. Like what in the world? I feel like when your energy, and this is kind of a normal, like the conservative energy of a tribal identity is we define ourselves by drawing our boundaries tighter. When that it means the boundaries get slower, you find a new person to define yourself against, which is like the opposite of more progressive identities. It's always we're expanding the boundaries and we do it with this energy that's there, which, you know, which means in some places it'll be like critical mass of your own tribe going, whoa, how do we get here so fast? Like, look at all the progress we've made. What about this and that? And when the energy of that kind of identity is there, it just assumes historical context. And it's like, what's the boundary we have to expand and put all our energy in? Or what's the one we're going to contract and define ourselves by? And I think that's made this time a bit different, along with new technologies and all that kind of stuff. Like, I've joked, like, we would not, everyone in my emerging church cohort would not have shown up if we could have gone and checked each other's Twitter. We would have been like, oh, I don't want to hang out with them. But since we did hang out with them and then we were friends, now I just see their tweets. I'm like, man, I really think they should not tweet that. But they are my friend.
Right. Yeah. It makes a difference. There's people that, you know, if you met them on social media, you might think, well, I don't know. But you meet them in person and you're like, oh, well, I guess we can be friends.
We'll be right back.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.
Let's get back to the show.
Where do you think it's all going then? Man, I like your image of the bolognese, you know, getting boiled down. Like, at what point does it just become, you know, ruin the pan? You know what I mean? Like, that just all the moisture is boiled off. Like, what's the end game here? Do you think about that?
I mean, Project 2025? Like, I don't, like, you know, I just kind of go like, I don't know. Like, because we lived in Scotland, right, for 3 years, we were there when Biden was elected. Okay. And with the pandemic and stuff, you're just in another country. So I just thought, man, the internet wants me to hate half my neighbors back home. And then we came back and I realized that it was not an exaggeration. Things that were just different. And so we hadn't really lived in North Carolina, where my wife and I are from, for 15 years. And I'm like, whoa, you know, friends and family and stuff, like some of them just, you know, did something happened to them, you know? And there's not a shared reality there. The volume of resentment that shapes their faith and the kind of like weird contortions, people that were like, Tripp, you should take the Bible more seriously to me in the past, or just coming up with stuff where I'm like, I don't know. Weed ain't even legal here, but y'all on something, you know?
Smoking something.
Yeah. I don't know what you were doing before you exegeted this text, but you got some creative gymnastics that even I find uncomfortable. So something definitely happened. And I think one of the temptations for people that are coming out of it is so often we tend to the particular content of something we don't like or disagree with or we're hurt by or whatever. And we make that the thing. And it then generates a kind of animosity towards our neighbors. The psychology is it makes their commitment to things you find repulsive more intense. And they're going to be more resistant to changing their mind. So it's just pragmatically bad. But on the other side, it also, when we make a particular idea or something, then we don't attend to how the context, our cultural context, that's actually more helpful to examine when looking at predicaments. And if we think of the context of things that have changed between lockdown, the increasing algorithmic tribal things, the incentive structure for social media, baby boomers retire and then they sit on Fox News and Facebook and they can't differentiate an ad, propaganda or whatever. Like I've seen it on, and so, the some of what's taking place is the result of a host of features from our culture at the moment. And I just feel like that's more of a, that this moment was not what was happening during the emerging church movement. And I don't think it would be possible with our current moment, because you're going, so many people don't engage unless they already know sameness is required for engagement.
Yeah, that's what I'm struck by too, Trip. Like, I remember being at an event that Doug Padgett did at our church in Chicago in the mid-aughts, and essentially it was for one of his books, like on body prayer or something. It was like praying with your body, right? And I remember I went to a really conservative evangelical seminary at the time, and I had two professors sent me down, and they were like super concerned about, you know, my faith, and I was a pastor of this church too. You know, how could you be leading people astray? And I'm like, we just prayed and stood differently. like, you know, it wasn't. And I'm struck by I'm struck by how like innocuous and benevolent that feels.
That's how they get you.
Well, but 20 years later, you know, 18 years later, we aren't talking about churches dividing over whether we can pray with our bodies or whether yoga is okay. Like now it's like, you know, if I have a problem with a black man being executed in the street without a trial, then I'm not a Christian anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I just feel like that's a much, I mean, the word polarizing gets thrown around a lot, and I don't necessarily think that polarity is the problem. I think it's a symptom or an indication of the problem, but I'm struck by how just vastly different world we're living in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, even like that issue in the Emerge podcast on the episode where we went through all the critiques people did, we play the clip for when Doug was on CNN. Yeah. And John MacArthur was the other person on there, the California evangelical fundamentalist guy. And it's funny now, right? They would never have a segment like this on CNN because it's literally like not a thing. Like you just don't even think about it. Whoever would be worried about it doesn't watch CNN. And everyone that watches CNN, religious and non-religious, are like, what's wrong with stretching and praying? Like, flexibility is a good thing. So I think you're right. And but if we think of that, the energetic, like the antagonistic energy of any identity, the predicament of yoga and stuff then was what shows up for the gatekeepers of conservatism that they have to draw a boundary on. And yoga is one of them at that point, but it's but it's not anymore. But once you get to the question of, say, like, oh, there's this George Floyd thing and it's on the screen now, that's a reality they had to see, and there's like a chunk of people in their congregation that was like, well, this isn't right, is it, you know? And I think that the moment it became an issue in the congregation, they do the kind of energy of antagonistic way, in an antagonistic way of like, how are we going to define ourselves? How are we going to work this stuff out? We know this is the wrong side of the issue, so let's leverage to go, which is fascinating. So John MacArthur covered up kitty touchers in his congregation and everyone knows it. Not like ambiguous. The receipts are all on the internet. You can Google it.
Yeah,
I would just give you a little trigger warning before you do. Yep. It's exactly what you think it could be, and worse. Yeah. That it doesn't no problem for him to keep, you know, keep his church open in COVID. No problem. Like, go through the list of all the stuff he's done, like protecting kitty touchers in leadership, things like that. But Lord knows, Black Lives Matter and yoga. That's the junk he pulls rank on. So, yeah. You know, there's that similarity that the same guy's doing it, but the issue's definitely migrated where you can see a shift, I think, where the more evangelical conservative types in America see the rest of culture as making it increasingly clear how problematic their supposed biblical values are culturally. And that generates, you know, the judgments there because it's the main group you're allowed to make fun of. And then that resentment comes up. The moment you're in a defensive posture, you're going to do something like listen to your lawyers and protect yourself around sex crime stuff. Yeah. And you don't want any more people slipping away. So let's just be clear. All lives matter, you know, or right. whatever, yeah, you know, exactly. whatever. We're not gonna let the state shut down our churches during COVID. So it's like a similar energy, but
yeah.
I don't think it's just more intense.
Yeah.
I think if you told me, you know, I mean, I think I have a book still on my bookshelf somewhere about the worship wars, you know, Hillsong versus him. Yeah. And if you would have told me that would now be what we're now we'd be people defending pedophiles and not wearing masks. Like, it's just in a different universe in terms of importance and also like bonkers town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It is something. Yeah. I think if you exited early on, like, I've realized when I got to college as a Baptist preacher's kid that my family were very progressive Baptists and the others were a little weirder than I thought. And then, you know, within a few years, I've worked at mainline Protestant churches the whole time and graduate school was with, you know, liberal Protestants in America. So, like, it hasn't been my tribe apart from the people I'm friends with or family with. And every time these things come up, I'm like, I recognize whatever it was that blessed me in that space is less and less familiar to me. And that part's sad, but
What, I mean, you talked a little bit about this in the podcast, but I wonder, like, as you think about, you know, we talked about kind of some similarities and differences, but what do you see as the legacy or the positive sort of enduring legacy of that whole time, that emerging church phenomenon?
Well, the thing, Tony Jones and I did all these interviews. The thing that basically everyone said was that being a part of the movement meant they made lifelong friends, and they're all still friends. Some of them hadn't hung out in a while, and then we have them together. Others do all the time, and half of the interview that never makes it on anything is just them telling us about what they did last time with their friends. Mm-hmm. So which was always kind of an intentional element in it was, you know, using the language of generative friendship and this kind of thing. Yeah. Yeah. Everyone that had blogs, if people still remember what those were, there were the little banner bar, like, I'm a friend of Emergent Village. And it was on there. So that, I think, has been for the people, you know, that I guess you would put on a list of leaders. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that comes up the most. There are elements where what was deemed edgy or something just isn't anymore. The easiest is how many evangelical churches do Advent and Lent. Right. That was complained about quite a bit by evangelical gatekeepers during emerging church time. And you're like, I mean, the Catholic Church was like the only option for most of church history, and they do it. So I don't see how it's sub-Christian, you know. But there's that. The kind of emphasis on embodied stuff, experiential things, you can see continues to shape things in different ways. And it was one of the earlier places where in American religion, you see a shift from institutions to influencers. And this is ubiquitous, right? In all social identity groups, right? So the number of people who say none about political party and religion, half of them are deeply committed and predictable participants in one version or the other. It's just, they like, this is not my identity. But if you asked them like about your politics, like, I'm a Bernie bro.
You know,
that says exactly what it means. You're probably voting Democrat unless you have a chance of winning in this. And if you're in a swing state, you'll still vote blue for the president. But if you're not, you're like, well, I'm in California. I'm going to give a vote over here. So so that shift of we trust the institutions. And so are we Methodist or Lutheran? You know, go through like your denominational structures, camps. Yeah. Denominational seminaries, all that kind of stuff is shifting more and more to influencer based, where these groups, Immersion Village being one that happened then, but also Gospel Coalition, Missio Alliance, like all those kind of things, or major figures like Scott McKnight, or like these kinds of things where people go like, oh, I just have a deep suspicion of institutions, but like, here's one of the good ones. And I love Rachel Held Evans, and she switched denominations. But I've always listened to her blog. When she became Episcopal, I didn't go, oh, never mind, because I already trusted her, right? Or you like Nadia, so you visited a Lutheran church, or those kind of things. And the number of emerging church people who do something at their evangelical place where they grew up, get excommunicated, and now are leaders in mainline Protestant churches is significant.
That's a pipeline right there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like a fired evangelical youth leader, Episcopal priest pipeline. That's it's kind like, of a, who needs sardines when you got incense? And they just
that may or may not be part of how you could write both Matt and I's story as well. Yeah. So, yeah.
Anybody? Then I wish y'all were wearing some sweet gothic chain or something up in here.
I know, yeah. I should really embrace the Episcopal priest thing a bit more.
Maybe we'll bring it to Denver. I'll just rock a full cassock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Rock a collar.
That's a good idea.
But then maybe like have it like liturgically colored, so you just, they know what season you're in.
Right.
You're like, I'm laid back. I don't use a stole. I just get a colored thing.
Right. Just a colored tab. Yeah. And that's how you know what season we're in. Yep. I've never heard that idea. That's very, very funny. Yeah.
I have a friend that wears, he has like multiple versions of the same glasses, and they're colored to match whatever the liturgical season is.
Right. Oh, that's fun. It isn't Mark Scandrett, is it?
No, he's always red.
And always red? Okay.
Yeah, he's always wearing those red
glasses. He's a colored glasses guy.
Yeah. Well, he has some clear ones, but you know, he doesn't, he's San Francisco, I don't think they have the liturgical seasons there.
they don't have the seasons at all. So,
they just have
lovely weather year round.
Well, you know, the Bay, but it does in the summer, you have the early morning stuff is kind of gross. It's just, you take a shower and you walk outside and it's all muggy.
Yeah. Maybe flip side on the emerging church conversation. What do you think? And again, this gets talked about in the podcast, which, you know, if you're interested listener, I would encourage you to listen to. But what do you think is what do you think some of the mistakes that were made in that time, in the emerging church movement?
Oh, well, I don't know. I mean, there's some like little ones, and the biggest question that leadership wrestled with is, like, how do you lead a movement that's connecting online, connecting at events, having these little outposts, and you just don't like being leaders, like in the sense, like you don't want an authority structure or anything.
Right.
And the kind of commitment to keep avoiding that meant there was some kind of, you know, there are limits to growth and influence, even though there are lots of people who's kind of initial foray into public space was a part of it, but it was never organized in a way. You know, there's nothing proto-denominational about it. It wasn't built in a sustainable way. If you wanted to have the financial support to do better organizing and equipping and accountability structure stuff, like the, and that's fine. Like, you know, it all kind of depends on what the goal was and what you were doing or not doing. But it made it a real attractive place for people to spend some time and a hard place for people to trust vocationally as their primary network, if you're thinking of clergy and that, which I think has its limits. And when it's something that's like that has that kind of like startup entrepreneurial side to it, it involves a kind of grind that when you do plant your church or you do start your this or whatever, the amount of time you have to do that dwindles just because your responsibilities for what it inspired goes. And then like, how do you maintain a volunteer leadership organization type thing under that structure? So and that's more like Emergent Village in general. The whole emerging church movement, I think, kind of splintered in things as certain topics came up and they were like too far for certain people. Right. So, the number of people that were like, whoa, 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 like, I don't want to have to answer for Brian McLaren on being open and affirming. And then it's like, yeah, but you are. Yeah, but I'm not going to tell anyone. I like my insurance. And
and that's how Mammon works. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, and there were other ones, right? Like, when Everything Must Change came out and Brian did the tour, kind of first one, I think it was around 08, and made a real kind of systemic social justice thing, not so much a neo-monastic style or this kind of thing. There are some that resisted. When the asking of theological questions and stuff in the early days got to people having very different answers than the tribes that were supporting it and publishing and events and stuff, that, you know, made another thing. And there are all these groups that kind of start out of it. You know, they all start out kind of in this broad emerging church thing. And the next thing you know, they're like, oh, we're the neo-monastics that still like the creed. We're the missional this in this place. Which, you know, that happens. And, honestly, like in 08, looking back, I would find it hard to have a group that broad stay connected when you see just how the election of, Barack Obama changed, lay people's relationship to religion. Yeah. Like it's after that, the self-sorting starts in a rather dramatic way. Now it wasn't obvious then. And, you know, part of it's probably because your friends that you talk the most about it probably are similar enough to you. But with each move, every time someone moves or whatever, the whole process of finding a church and finding jobs, like as groups get more and more definite on how their community feels about X, Y, and Z, we start sorting. And there are other things that increase the sorting. But when you just think of what happened in 08, with the data of American religion, I'm not sure a group that's like, no, we're all friends, because you know what being friends with someone does right now in the social media space? That's halfway to condemnation already. We're friends, but I told him he was a heretic the whole time. And they're like, but why were you with him? That's the slippery slope.
I started every conversation with, you know, we disagree about this one thing, right?
Yeah.
And now, a word from a sponsor.
Hey, the Gravity Commons podcast is supported by Respero. Henry Nouwen once wrote, "The role of a counselor is to help people not suffer for the wrong reasons," which I really like. This is one of the guiding principles of Respero's counselor training. They equip you to listen deeply, ask great questions, and speak words of life into the hearts and minds of hurting people. Their training cohorts, which a lot of our listeners have actually gone through and have said that they really enjoy. Their training cohorts feature lots of personal interaction and practice with feedback, and it's all rooted in the belief that Jesus is the source of life. So check it out at respero.org and learn how to move people toward real transformation, not just symptom removal.
And if I may, Ben, for pastors and ministry leaders, Respero's training is kind of a proven way to identify people in your church who have a gift for counseling and helping others. And it can be a powerful way to help make your church a genuine healing community. So they provide training and supervision that will allow your people to do great work and free up the pastoral staff, right? So, you know, I think we as pastors, we understand our job is to equip the saints for the work of ministry. And I think Respero then kind of digs a little deeper and actually gives those saints sort of the hard and soft skills of how to do the work, right? Yeah. So go to Respero, R-E-S-P-E-R-O.org, and click on the Counselor Training tab. Listener, this ad is different than other ads. Ben and I are going to be at a conference, and we want you to join us. We did a national gathering for Gravity in 2017. We did a grief kind of retreat last summer, and we've been looking for ways to gather this year with all y'all because we love spending time with you, and we got invited into something called Theology Beer Camp, which is October 17th through 19th in Denver, Colorado. We're joining a host of other people from around the country. We're going to do some podcasting there. Ben, who all is going to be there?
I'm excited about Ilya Delio.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
The unbearable wholeness of being changed my life.
Yeah, incredible. Brian McLaren's going to be there. Diana Butler-Bass, Brian Zond.
We know him.
Other folks.
Yeah, there's going to be lots of podcasting, lots of keynote speaking, and lots of time to hang out. There's going to be a lot of relational time, and we may even record some podcasts. We'd love to record podcasts even with you, listener. They've given us a discount code for all of our listeners because we are a sponsor. Yeah. So if you go to gravitycommons.com/theologycamp and use the code GravityHobbit, that'll give you an idea of the kind of gathering we're doing here. You get $25 off tickets. Prices go up soon, so register today.
Yep. Beer is optional, by the way.
Yeah, but theology isn't.
Theology isn't, but the beer is optional. All right, that code again, or the website again, friends, is gravitycommons.com/theologycamp. And make sure to use our code GravityHobbit, two Bs, to get $25 off tickets. Hope to see you there. All right, let's get back into our conversation.
Tripp, I wonder, looking back on this, I mean, I was very peripherally, tangentially related to the emerging movement, but one of the things that wasn't on my radar in the mid-aughts was the amount of decolonizing work I needed to do and how my mostly conservative evangelical frame was part of this colonial package that was doing my faith dirty, you know? I wonder that to me, that's what kind of Barack Obama began to reveal on a national public stage, you know, with the Tea Party movement coming out and birtherism. And I mean, he wore a brown suit. I can't believe I can get that out of my mouth, you know, scandals. And so, I think one of the things that, you know, my interaction with the emergent church was mostly a white sort of, middle upper class kind of, post evangelical kind of crew. And one of the things that I see now happening in spaces that maybe some ex-emergent people are in is it's much more diverse, right? You have queer voices and black, brown, yellow voices, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know if you see the same thing, and maybe you can share about. I wonder if you could share about this decolonizing need, because I think I know progressive people who never decolonized, and it ain't pretty.
Yeah. I mean, I think macro, you're right. And the awareness of it in the emerging church movement really coincides with the election of Barack Obama. I think that's when Brian McLaren did, well, I'd have to look at the outline we made, the timeline, but somewhere around there is Brian does this talk at one of the big emergent gatherings on the real task of postmodernity is post-colonialism, and that's what a healthy deconstruction looks like. Because otherwise the theology functions as a justification for a power structure that's never going to be questioned.
Right.
So like when the authority structure of a kind of top-down vision of Christianity with clear, final, distinct, absolute answers on something withers, and the temptation, right, if what's made you secure and also what's preserved privilege is that structure, it's very tempting to update the content of the structure without reworking how it's the dynamic itself, right? And so part of postmodernity is kind of making fragile the belief structure of this kind of top-down, take-it-or-leave-it picture. And part of what a post-colonial analysis does is like, it's like you could take out the content, but the form of it is still also problematic. And so there's this shift of a critique of top-down authority to much more horizontal or networked visions of community and voices. And that was always something that you saw kind of continuously growing through the emerging church movement. Part of it was ecumenical. So there were just people, there were like female clergy from mainliners there that are like, right, y'all are, this is weird. But you would have people from denominations that are much more closed, but the members that were at part of the emerging church movement were the ones that were open.
Right. Yeah.
Like when they kind of like officially were like, Mark Driscoll's never coming back, it was because he lost his biscuits about women doing stuff. Right. And, which is quite a fascinating story to hear, the Mark Driscoll story in Emerging Village. The guy has switched his theology quite a few times from, you know, like, oh, I'm postmoderny, testosterone. Mm-hmm. Then next thing you know, he's like, oh, I'm Calvinist, so Calvinist. and now he's like a charismatic MAGA preacher. And the only consistent part is he yells and he knows he's right. Right? Yeah. He could change his mind drastically. Yeah.
Right.
I have to write a whole new systematic theology, but he's always right and he's angry about it. Yeah. The kind of edge issues in the emerging church movement tended to be what was the edgiest for mainline clergy and evangelical clergy that went to the more open evangelical schools. You know, like, what were they talking about at Yale, Duke, and Fuller? Not like Bob Jones. The people who came from Bob Jones were already ostracized by hanging out.
Right.
Yeah. So that was there. But in the present, which I would say there's a really good interview in the Emerge series with Anthony Smith about his experience. Yeah. He was a popular blogger before he became part of the emerging church movement. Yeah. A Postmodern Negro was the name of his blog. We were in the same cohort, Emerging Village cohort. The stream of people that stayed in the Emergent Village through the kind of shift towards more post-colonial reflection, you see as kind of leaders in that space still. Yeah. And but I do think the kinds of questions you ask when it's not just content questions, but form are the ones that are most uncomfortable for evangelicals that see that form, the hierarchical form, is preserving something that's part of their identity, even if it's not always conscious. Right. So that's, I think you see it something similar. It's like, how did you complain about Bill Clinton and get pumped about Trump?
Yeah.
What is it that's there? It's not the content, because you literally said the content about you've changed, but there's a form and that kind of desire for an ordered world by an authority with power. And even then, I'd just say, psychologically speaking, it is not, a lot of times it's not personal. Like, they're just personality types that's how, that is what they need to manage, the anxiety of existence. It doesn't mean the outcomes or whatever beautiful, but there are just some people who, like, when you're like, no, live in the questions, let's have an open-handed like, they're just like, what are you doing to me? And it's I found the whole science of religion stuff actually really helpful for having compassion on people when you realize that different personality types desire answers for different questions to feel secure. Mm-hmm. Some of the ones the emerging church movement loved asking were like the ones where they're like, how can I go to bed tonight? You know, I'm gonna have to go watch some Answers in Genesis YouTube videos
just to calm myself down.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think that's really helpful, Trip. In terms of just recognizing, like, people behaving as if something is an existential threat are usually doing so because it feels like an existential threat to them. You know what I mean? Like it you know,
there's some crisis cosplayers. I mean, there's some people that do.
I mean, that's true.
Usually the ones that make money.
There's people that whose entire economy is based upon fabricating, manufacturing, fomenting moral panic, right?
Yes. You guys are exactly right. I think those are, for me, like, the bad guys, but I'm thinking about, family members, people I know that are caught up in this stuff, that are just, they're susceptible to the machinations of these people who know what they're doing, right? And releasing this propaganda and stoking this fear because they're just making millions of dollars doing it. Well, man, there's probably a ton of stuff we could talk about for a long time, but maybe as we draw this to a close, Trip, one of the questions that I've been thinking about as we've been talking, you know, a lot of people in our audience are, they sort of have this uncomfortable relationship with evangelicalism. Some people have left completely. Some people are, you know, they've stopped going to church, or they're trying to find a church, or they're still, you know, at their old church, but like really, you know, just because, well, these are my friends and this is where I belong. And I can hardly, you know, stand to listen to the sermons anymore. I mean, they're all uncomfortable with where they're at, I think. It's maybe a common denominator. And I wonder maybe just like what you would say to them as somebody who has really not been part of this world for a long time. If there's any word, almost like a pastoral word of just comfort or encouragement or something that you'd want to say to somebody who feels like they're living in that tension of like, I don't know if this is the place for me anymore, but I don't know what I would do.
Yeah. I mean, I think this kind of depends on what your role is. Mm-hmm. When it's just like the church you've been a member at and their friends and stuff, where voicing something or asking your close friends to process it out loud. I would talk to the ones you feel safest to and go like, well, here's my concerns and here's what I'm uncomfortable with. Because oftentimes other people have it. And when they fear like a universal, ubiquitous response of judgment or criticism, if they voiced it, then you get permission for it. And if they don't, they already know and trust you. So they're like, to know someone that raises a question or is uncomfortable with something, then their relational connection to you makes them significantly more open to recognizing the humanity of someone else in that situation they don't know. So, but that's a discernment as to who you can tell. Clergy in that situation, make sure you talk to your partner before you say or do anything. And there's nothing inherently good about burning things down as you leave or getting in trouble just to be the, the squeaky wheel or like to be, I just preach biblical truth and they got rid of me. And you're like, well, you also did it in a particular way. So like that temptation's there and I've seen people handle it, poorly. But the other thing I'd say is when it goes to things you're asking, if it's a question and you can find people in the community that takes your questions and doubts seriously, that's different than if the issue is intimately connected to you or family member. Like I have a friend recently whose kid came out and that dramatically changed the way they could participate in their church, even though as, you know, longtime members, they were open about being open and affirming when their church wasn't. But then when he and his wife realized their presence there led their own child to internalize a kind of criticism they didn't want, that changed, right? And if you're a person in the queer community or whatever, don't put yourself in front of a firing squad for no reason. But if you have privilege and you have relationships, sharing and speaking into something can be a great way to be an ally. The other thing I'd say, like if you're a volunteer in the youth group or you're the actual youth minister, just know when you get replaced, it's worse for all the teenagers that are there. So that's usually my biggest encouragement is like, you know, they are barely pay attention to what happens in youth group. And all the important stuff happens on retreats when they're asking questions in the car or late at night. And so if you are a person of integrity and trusted and just a straight white guy sitting in an evangelical church, sometimes your patience can mean that someone gets a very grace-filled response when they raise their questions, maybe religious ones or identity ones or whatever. If you're able to stay and be yourself, then perhaps one way of framing what you're doing is, you know, keeping the stew from boiling down a little more in that space.
Right.
But yeah, that's a discernment question. I think asking trusted friends is way better than taking my advice. But that's when I've talked to friends in that situation, sometimes it's like that.
Yeah.
And making sure you and your family are all on the same page in it mm-hmm. is very important. Especially let's say one member of the family, one of the kids or one of the partners has more baggage, can't really participate all the time and aren't feeling comfortable. Figuring out like how you can make space for someone in your family who's struggling and carrying questions and how you can be yourself in it. Those are the kinds of things I would, you know, I would ask about. You know, people are going to people. And they're still in the ideal church in your head doesn't exist. And, right. And humans are in all of them and they're assholes with great ideas as well. So, just they're all over the place. As long as your church still has a prayer of confession, it's honest about it, you know?
Right.
It's like, here's what we're working with.
It's we're honest about this, at least, liturgically. That's helpful. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Just as we go here, we mentioned Theology Beer Camp. Beer is optional, by the way, listener. You don't have to drink beer to come to camp. You can just come for the theology. What are you excited about this year, maybe more than other years, that's going on?
I kind of get excited every year for different reasons. One, the venue in Denver is great. Denver has a great airport, so it's easy to get to from around. Mm-hmm. You know, there'll be around 600 people there from all over. And there's some people that come internationally and things. So it's the best part every year is like getting to meet in person all these people you interact with on the internet. Mm-hmm. The kind of between session things is the most important part for it. And that kind of includes, there's like 30 some scholars there. So the likelihood that if you want to just go talk to one, they're only going to do one or two things and no one's allowed to come speak unless they hang out the whole time. So like one flies in, talks and leaves. So you're able to talk to a lot of the different scholars. You'll able to meet podcasters that you listen to. Also everyone there is at least attached to one of them, probably five or six. And an increasing number of people may not have a community they feel at home with. I know people listen to the podcast while the sermon's going on at their church and with their earbuds because they're like the music and service or their friends or whatever, but they're like, I can't do that. Yeah. So I just listen to the podcast. So it's kind of cool because if you Venn diagrammed all the listeners of all the podcasts, there's lots of overlap. So you can come, you'll meet a lot of the podcasts that you listen to, meet other ones you didn't even know about that are in a similar vein. And I always like it. Like we've never met. Every year I try to get more podcasts to come because the network effect of like-minded people that are trying to create content for the community they're stewarding, like a lot of times there are people that will listen to this and go, there are these four other podcasts I didn't know about. Yeah. Now, after you hung out with them at beer camp, once you do some karaoke together, maybe in cosplay, Lord of the Rings cosplay, we got it. Opening night, there's always karaoke. This year we got prizes for cosplay and it's Lord of the Rings theme. So there's going to be three different categories, but one of them be Lord of the Rings since that's the thing we're using for all of the promo stuff.
There's a theme.
Yeah. Now that we're not talking about Lord of the Rings the whole time, but there is a geek stage where, there's last year it was like Star Wars, Star Trek, Lord of the Rings, Marvel, and Lost. But still be different things like that. Okay. I know there's Lord of the Rings one this year. And last year I dressed up like Chewbacca for opening night.
Nice. Okay.
And I just say wearing a Chewbacca outfit and doing karaoke with a significant amount of IPAs means you have to dry clean it afterwards if you go hard for the Lord with your singing.
And it sets a tone that I think is a good good tone setter for the weekend.
Yeah. So this time we're going to have a cosplay competition. So if you got to talk to the Gravity Commons people coming, you got to say, mm-hmm. maybe maybe we want to pick something we all just go together. Like, maybe you want to get four people like hobbits and one dressed up like a pony and it's Bill the Pony. And you're like, whoa, or maybe you go second age Lord of the Rings. You're just like, let's do Baron and Luthien, the greatest love story of Middle Earth no one knows about unless they've read the Silmarillion. You never know what could happen.
I like these ideas.
I'm just saying, very good. I like it because I can do a tax write-off for my cosplay costume. That is work-related.
It's work-related. Yeah, it's excellent.
Yeah, so I'm trying to decide where I'm going to go this year on it. There's also, on top of lots of beverage, not just alcohol, there's an AA group of people are at a place in recovery where they feel comfortable being there and want to connect with people. Mm-hmm. Last year, there's kombucha and wine and other things and lots of non-alcoholic drinks. But if you like beer, it's Denver. And we get all the different breweries in the area to come. And so you don't even have to go to all the breweries. They all bring beer. And throughout it, last year, I think we had 48 different kegs, different type beer that ran through. So when there's hundreds of people and half of them are beer nerds, you can just do tasters and try them all. And you're just, or you just go in line with your friend that is, and you get them to fill up one for your friend. And then they love you forever. There are hotels that we have set up with shuttles, so you don't have to worry about that. There's live music and stuff. Flamey Grant and Ivy King and Kevin Max from DC Talk are playing. There's a giant bottle share. There's food, all breakfast and lunches and stuff all included. One night there, when we have the October Fiesta party, there's a food truck set up and... Yeah. There's usually a cornhole tournament, sword drill, Bible trivia game, all sorts of weird things happen. It's kind of what happens if someone that really misses seminary seminars and was a youth minister for 15 years, talked a whole bunch of podcasters and theologians to hang out. That's what happened. That's what it is. This year we've added stuff for introverts over time. I always, I'm not one, but during all the breakouts, you can kind of go to different stages, more normal person stage. Oh, the theology nerd stage. Oh, I'm going to go geek stage. If you're just I got to vibe out. It's a meditation room. Then there's practice-based breakouts, conversation-based breakouts, all that kind of stuff. There's lots more things each year. And there's a huge group of people that all put it together. This time I finally kind of feel like I'm just riding on it. I still have to do lots of stuff, but for years I would just spend the year planning the whole thing. And then once it got too big to manage myself, 3 years ago, I basically ran around the whole time planning stuff and fixing things and managing stuff that, then I got people to work with me all year on it. So now I get to have more fun.
Great.
There's also there's a time where we all smoke cigars. People like doing that. And we're in the process of working on a responsive reading from Tolkien that moves through the legendarium, which may happen. I don't know.
This is absolutely bonkers. Even more bonkers than I was thinking it was going to be, Trip. I'm looking forward to it. It sounds crazy.
Well, it is, but, you know, if you only plan one big event a year and every year we do survey things and people give me ideas and then I think about it. And then as we're planning, the more all the stuff you have to plan gets planned, then we're what could we do now? before we talked, I've been working with a cigar company, on a blend for Beer Camp and, I got it down to two different blends and I was testing them. See, this is the kind of service I bring to the attendees. The 8% of the 600 people that smoke cigars will smoke one Trip really likes. This. And I put a lot of effort into it, you know?
Okay.
So yeah, it'd be good. It'd be good. Y'all got a code you can tell people to use.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll let people know. Appropriately enough, Gravity Hobbit.
So
that's Lord of the Rings
about.
For the win. Well, Trip, this has been loads of fun. thanks for joining us today to chat about Theology Beer Camp and the emerging church and theology and religion and philosophy and history. The whole thing. It was loads of fun. Thanks
Excellent.
For being with us.
It's been fun.
Peace.
Well, it was fun. Never talked with Tripp before.
Yeah. I liked it.
Yeah.
But there were so many questions I wanted to ask him. He does so much stuff, and I'm particularly interested in philosophy and religion. I'm interested in epistemology. I'm interested in all that stuff, but maybe we'll do that at Theology Camp.
Yeah, it would be fun to follow up on a lot of those themes. It was interesting. I mean, it's interesting to me how, I guess a lot of the questions, one of the things I found interesting was him talking about the sort of perennial questions of religion along with the cultural context, the contextual questions that people are asking. And I do think that does seem to explain something maybe that feels unique, at least to me, about our current cultural moment. Because, you know, you add the questions that any thoughtful person is going to eventually ask about their faith, right? You know, problem of evil, all that kind of stuff that he listed. But then you add to that this sort of ethical crisis that so many people have experienced where they're like, wait, the people who taught me, you know, to live with moral integrity, like, are supporting someone that clearly has none of it. Like, like, what's going on here? And so there's this dissonance, sort of relationally and culturally that also then I think fans into flame any dissonance that any thoughtful person is going to experience if they start asking questions, you know, about how do we know what we know and what is the Bible and where did it come from? And, you know, what's the deal with evil and why is there so much suffering in the world? Like all those normal questions, I just think they're just, expanded by the crisis of our current cultural moment, at least for people of faith, seems like.
Yeah. And I think too, I wanted to talk more about, he talked about like the content changing, but the frame structure. Structure. He said structure. And I think that was the thing I didn't know 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I couldn't see the structure.
Yeah.
And I didn't know the work the structure was doing.
Mm-hmm.
I just, the structure was invisible, but the structure filtered and focused my attention on, it was really limiting. Now it was also revealing in some ways, but it was very limiting. But once I started to like, it's like a being in a room with, like being one of those mirror houses, you know, that they used to have like the state fair.
Yeah.
And part of it is you kind of just, you don't know where the wall is until you hit it.
right.
You know? And I think that's been my experience over the last 10 years is just like walking into walls and then saying to somebody, hey, there's a wall here.
Right.
Is it supposed to be here? And the people saying, yeah, oh yeah, 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 you can't touch that wall.
Right.
And I'm like, well, this wall is keeping these people out, or that this wall is hurting these people, or this wall is, you know, this wall shouldn't be here. Like, what about this thing Jesus said about this kind of wall?
Right.
And it was like, it's like kind of like the Fight Club rules. Like, you're not supposed to talk about that wall, but now you're talking about that wall. You definitely can't get rid of that wall.
Right.
If you try to get rid of that wall, even as we pretend the wall doesn't exist, you no longer are one of us.
Yeah.
So I think that was like, I know that's kind of, that's pretty meta, Ben. But that, I mean, I'm talking in generalities, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But for instance, like white supremacy, like I remember arguing over and over and over with people on social media that being against white supremacy isn't a partisan issue, meaning this isn't a progressive thing or a conservative thing. It's a Christian thing.
Right.
And we want to eradicate white supremacy because that's partiality and it's in contrast and defiance of the gospel and of Jesus who rids the cosmos of partiality, right?
Right.
I was wrong. I was wrong. It is a partisan issue. I didn't want it to be, and I stood in conservative spaces for years.
Yeah.
Looking at other conservatives saying, why do all the best anti-racists have to be progressive? Right. But I didn't know about that. And there's some walls that are like, we like this wall, you can't get rid of it. And there's some walls that are load-bearing. Mm. And white supremacy is a load-bearing wall in U.S. conservative Christianity.
Yeah.
Just try to dismantle or take it seriously in a white conservative space, and you'll find out really quick.
Yep. Yeah, I think that's... even 20 years ago, as I started a blog basically because I was trying to connect with people who were thinking like this, you know what I mean? Like, and I couldn't find anybody in my, you know, in my local,
Reaching out just church. To touch another hand. That's
It was just like, oh, this is super interesting. Who else would like to talk to me about this? So I would read blogs, make, you know, this is, you know, before social media. So you start a blog, and then you write and you hope that people comment, and you comment on other people's blogs. So all that to say, I remember, I think intuitively realizing that there was more than just a content shift, like Tripp was talking about.
Yeah.
Because when we started talking about epistemology, I was like, wait, this is like structure. Like, what is reality, and how do we conceive of it? And you know, there's something deeper happening here that will be sort of, it will be upsetting the apple cart more than just if I change my theology from, you know, pre-millennial to post-millennial or something like that. The structural stuff feels way more fraught, because I think it's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of identity and belonging that happens for people just inside those structures. And so, I mean, back to just people feeling like there's this existential threat. When you start questioning certain things, when you start questioning the load-bearing wall, it does feel like an existential threat, because in many ways it is an existential threat to that identity, to that way of, you know, conceiving of your belonging. And it does require a very difficult journey, really, to sort of find a new, you know, identity, find a new, like, what does it mean to be me? What does it mean to be a Christian? What does it mean to be a person of faith? You know, gosh, yeah. Big questions.
Yep.
But yeah. I don't know. I on my best days, I really think it's like, man, what a time to be alive. That these are the questions, you know what I mean? Like, it's not every age that we get to wrestle with stuff like this.
Yeah.
Some ages are just, you know, they're more stable. They're like, well, yeah, this is how things have been going for 300 years, and this is about it. So there's something invigorating about that for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so join us too, listener.
Yeah.
At Theology Camp. I'm excited. I know of two listeners that are already coming. If you're coming, use our discount code and let us know, and we can meet up and hang out and kick it.
Yes.
You know?
Yep. Gravity Hobbit, again, is the discount code. And to get the information, you can go to gravitycommons.com/theologycamp.
Great. Ben, all right. One more thing, Ben. What's blue and not very heavy?
I was going to say the ocean, but I think the ocean's pretty heavy.
No, you shouldn't overthink this.
Okay.
It's light blue.
Oh. That makes sense.
Yeah. Doesn't it?
It does. Just like my can of seltzer water here. Kind of light blue.
There you go. All right, everybody.
See you next time.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of the Gravity Podcast. If you're finding it helpful, please tell your friends about it. Word of mouth is the best advertising. Ratings and reviews online also help others find the podcast. And don't forget to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. To join discussions about the podcast and lots more, join us in the Gravity community. It's free to join, and you can connect with other listeners to the podcast to talk about faith, spirituality, and whatever else comes up. Also, Ben and I hang out there a lot. To join, go to gravitycommons.com/community. The Gravity Podcast is produced by Ben Sternke and Matt Tebbe. Aaron Sternke edits and mixes the podcast. You can check out his mixing, engineering, and production work at aaronsternke.com. And we'd love to hear from you. To record a question or comment for us, go to gravitycommons.com/message and click the Start Recording button. You can also email us at podcast@gravitycommons.com. Catch you next time.
People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply. People are driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. The hiring process can be slow and overwhelming. Simplify hiring with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. That's Indeed.com/PODKATZ13. Terms and conditions apply.